As athletes, we are also human beings living in a stressful world. While the school of hard knocks can build a sort of rough mental fitness, we all have gaps and weaknesses in our resilience to stress and our ability to focus our attention and to build and sustain the confidence we need to perform our best. Today on episode 110, I am talking with Kate Allgood of Quantum Performance about mental training for peak performance. Kate is the author of three books: The Athlete Within, How to Build Your Mental Game for Peak Performance; Get Into the Zone, The Essential Guide to High Performance Through Mental Training; and most recently, Fortitude, The Essential Guide to Building and Sustaining Mental Toughness. And today she shares her framework and mental tools we all can use to perform better by being smarter and more efficient with our energy. Stress can be exciting, making us feel more alive, but too much stress can steal the joy from our lives and from our sport. Kate has the tools to help us focus our attention on the present, avoid overthinking, and to modulate our body's stress response to suit each situation. Less stress and higher performance? What's not to like? All right, let's talk to Kate Allgood about building mental fitness. Kate Allgood, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, I appreciate it. So, Kate, you are an expert in, I'm not even quite sure how to put it, mental training for peak performance. Did I get that about right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good description for it. Yeah, mental training, mental performance, mindset training, mental skills training. One of those words or terminology usually is a good one.
Well, I like all of those words. And by gosh, I wish I was better at all of them. So maybe you're going to help me out here today. Tell us a little bit about your background here. We only have a little bit of time together, but how do you know about this stuff? And how do you know you're right?
The last part, I don't know. Maybe we don't. Maybe 20 years from now, they'll say we were all wrong all along. But I guess a little bit about my background. So I'm originally from Toronto, Canada, and I grew up playing a lot of different sports, but went very far with ice hockey. So I played college, I played professionally, was kind of, you know, pegged as a potential candidate for the Canadian Olympic team before I retired. And while I was kind of doing all of that with, you know, hockey, I also was doing my undergrad in psychology, and didn't know I liked psychology when I, you know, decided to take a first year psych class. And, you know, along the path, there were some classes in sports psychology. And so I took them as some of my electives and kind of, you know, figured through that undergrad that I really liked the mental side to performance. And I did take a little break after undergrad and before going back and doing my master's degrees. But I think that for me just hit a chord comparative to working with athletes on the physical side. I think I always knew I wanted to work with athletes, but I really liked the idea of the mental side. I think mainly because that was something I never really actually got exposure to. But I think I started to really understand its importance and how important it really was towards the end of my own career. And so that kind of what got me to decide to do it.
Great. And your experience in this area, I've read in your bio that you've worked with all kinds of athletes and business people. You want to give us a little description of that?
Yeah. So I kind of like a wide range of clients. I've worked with very young clients. I've worked with, you know, high school athletes, college athletes, professional Olympic athletes. But I've also worked with, I guess, what I would, you know, label as the weekend warrior. Some people in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are, you know, they're done school and they now work, but they're very competitive triathletes, people doing kind of master level, you know, track events or tennis or something of that nature. So I've got to see a wide range of ages, sports, skill levels. And I love that because it's educating for me to be able to work with such a wide variety of different clients.
Great. And you've written a few books too. Tell us what those names are and we'll talk about them a little more at the end so people can find them.
Yeah, so there's three different books. The first book I wrote was called Get Into the Zone, and I did that really as a good introduction if someone's new into maybe exploring mental performance, mental skills training. It's a really very quick, simple read and really gives a good idea of some of those you know, first aspects you want to maybe really start to focus on. And then a couple of years later, I wrote a book called Fortitude, which is really kind of building off of that first one. So people who, you know, wanted a little bit more, maybe a little more in depth, you know, knowledge and information on mental skills. And then my most recent book that just came out this year actually is called The Athlete Within. And it's really, I think, pulling everything I've learned to this date. And, you know, for really those people who probably want even a little bit more, right? They have a good understanding of maybe self-talk or goal setting or some of these kind of foundational components, and they want to now really explore, you know, being able to be much more, you know, present, get into the flow, really helping athletes deal with some of those things that they can't control. So really focusing on, you know, choosing your own way, finding an inner purpose, developing certain types of mindset, and really, really with a high focus on self-awareness and understanding yourself and what's going to help you.
Well, it sounds like that would apply to more than just athletics. But let's come back to that. I want to just make sure that I'm kind of understanding what you do. And as I was preparing for our talk today, I came up with an analogy that I want to throw on you and see if it works. So as an expert in mental training for peak performance, maybe that's like an athletic trainer, you know, a sports trainer who provides guidance on exercises an athlete might do and how much they might do and how they would recover from those and maybe how to organize a routine to build the physical skill and capacity for work over time. Would you say that that is kind of a model for what you do, but on the mental side?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great analogy. And I think that's something I've also been thinking about. How do you make that analogy? Because I think a lot of people don't understand on the mental side, the different roles different practitioners can play. And yeah, so I would definitely lean more towards almost that strength and conditioning coach and really helping you to, you know, build that mental muscle and get better and be able to, you know, respond better, focus better, make better decisions, get into the flow, some of those components of the equation. So it's really about help building your mental game.
Well, awesome. And one thing that a lot of people, I think, miss or have lost track of in some way related to physical fitness is that the more fit a person is, the more tolerance they have for working hard. Yes. I mean, so everyone would know that. But they also have a better capacity for recovering from hard exercise. So now, in a particular person, that might get offset by the fact that they are actually training harder. But when we're talking about mental fitness, you know, maybe to stretch the analogy a little bit, a person who has a better capacity for stress, let's just use that word, can recover from stress better. They can handle more stress and they can recover from stress better. And so perhaps one of the things that a person like you helps somebody like me do is get my mental fitness stronger so that I have better capacity for it and I can recover better from it. Does that sound right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's, I think, a couple of components there. Yeah, it's helping to make you stronger, more fit, I guess, in one sense, as you were saying, in terms of your mental performance. And then, as you said, almost having that resiliency, right? That ability to rebound and respond to whether it's maybe stress or pressure, right? To really be able to maybe handle more of it. And a big part of that is just really being able to, one, have the skill sets. And a lot of the stuff that I work on really does come down to there are skill sets. They can be developed, they can be built, and really focusing on doing that, which then ultimately allows you to probably handle more because you've developed the skills to be able to manage maybe those more stressful and high pressure situations.
Well, good. Well, so it's starting to make sense to me better than it has in the past. And obviously there's a lot of overlap here between training and even, you know, tools, call it tricks that an athlete might do for dealing with stress in a moment for a physical performance and what a person might do for dealing with stress in their lives. There's got to be a ton of overlap and they probably even go together. As I think about, you know, what would be easier, I can kind of see it going both ways. One, that sports performance may be, okay, let's just put professional athletes aside and maybe, you know, bullfighters and shark dancers and people who have really dangerous kinds of sporting events, but just regular people who are doing sports, it's really kind of boxed, right? It's only for a little bit of time. The stakes aren't that high. So it's a smaller thing than just than dealing with stress of your life, which is like all the time. And so maybe you could be good at the sports without being good with your stress management in your life. But on the other hand, I wonder if you really are just sort of handicapped emotionally in your life, it makes it impossible to have a good handle on yourself in the heat of a moment in like a sporting event. What do you find to be true?
Yeah, I think from what you just said, there's a couple of things where, if you're looking at an, I guess, more everyday person, you're correct that the sports often can be the stress release, right? And they can, you know, be able to go there and kind of do things differently, I guess, than maybe they would on their day-to-day lives. But I do think it all flows together. I think, and I see this because I still play hockey. So I go and I play in a men's adult league. And, you know, you still see the people who, you know, they lose their temper on the ice, right? You're getting, you know, 30, 40, maybe 50-year-old, you know, people. And that obviously is not coming from hockey, right? Like, that's not like we're not playing for the Stanley Cup, right? So we know it's not, you know, specific to the sport. And so that's probably stuff from their life, right? Flowing in. And definitely the skill sets that I work on with clients, I tell them it's not just about your sport. Usually the sport is the vehicle we're using to help develop the skill set, because maybe that's something they're really focused on. They care a lot about. The younger the athlete, usually it's what they care most about. And it's what intrigues them and they're interested in, and is a great path to help them develop certain mental skills. But definitely even for the older athletes, right, it does help them outside of their sports, because it is helping them to understand themselves and understand, you know, how do they deal with pressure and stress and the way that we are, you know, what starts to kind of break down from a mental performance perspective, confidence, focus, decision-making, communication. It's going to look very similar, whether it's in your sports endeavor, at the office, in school. And so these are skills that are going to be transferable, and then vice versa. Like, big thing, I'm very holistic in my approach. We do look at what's going on in your life, in your days, outside of your sports endeavor, because that ultimately is going to flow in and impact what's going to happen in your arena, in your sports arena.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, it's sensible. And obviously, I'm going to say obviously, and everybody I've ever known has always said, oh yeah, exercise is good for helping me to manage my stress. You know, I think stress is kind of physical. You know, if you talk about the stress that a zebra has when a lion is chasing the zebra, well, that's a physical stress. The zebra is running for its life. And if it gets away, then it doesn't have any of that stress left over, because it used it all up, and it's physical exertions to survive. And we don't get that. We just sit with that stress stewing in us. But if we can go exercise, maybe we get a little of that release. So that makes perfectly good sense. Another thing that, from like a framework point of view, that I think must be true, because it's true in everything else, and that's that there are many elements to mental performance, you know, mental fitness, when it comes to performance, and whether, you know, that's in sports or in your work life or whatever, there's many elements to it. And we can, each person can be good at some parts of it and not good at some parts of it. And then like physical fitness, there's always, you know, the cyclist who doesn't do anything but cycling, and their endurance is incredible. Their legs are very strong, you know, but they can't stand up straight, and, you know, they can barely pick their bike up when it tips over. You know, when you get older and you start thinking about longevity and staying healthy for a long time, you start thinking, gosh, you know, I need to find where I'm weak and try to balance myself out a little bit, you know, improve where my weaknesses are, rather than putting all of my energy into the things that I'm already strong at, because I'm not going to get a big return on that investment. Whereas if I put it all, put my time, my effort into things where I'm really weak, I'm going to get a big bang for it. So there's got to be some truth in that when it comes to this, you know, mental fitness too. Would you say that does that ring true? I mean, is that false?
No, I think like anything, like what you just said in terms of the physical, everyone has their strengths and their areas that maybe have a larger room for improvement. And that's definitely true with the mental side. And that's definitely one of the things that I go over with all of my athletes, is to look at what those strengths are for them and what are the biggest areas for improvement. I might differ to maybe, or look a little bit differently than you did, in terms of, I think we still want to focus on the areas that need the greatest amount of improvement. But I think in terms of sports, usually you're going to be really good if you do focus more heavily on your strengths and what helps to set you apart. and just make sure and help to make sure that your areas of weakness or vulnerability just don't get in the way. And there's definitely ways we can help you. And again, we're still going to help you to improve, but at the same time, we have to also focus in on the performance part. And that generally is going to rely on helping somebody to focus on what they're really good at and minimize the impact of those weaknesses.
Fair enough. Well, good. All right. So I wonder, I think I have some idea of what the buckets are, but maybe we can start to dive into some of these details of, well, what is this business, mental fitness business, and how do we, you know, go after it? I'm sure that there's like different levels, right? There's like mindset that you would bring to it, ways of thinking about things. And then there might be, you know, all the way down to like little mantras you might say to yourself over and over again, you know, little tricks that you might play on your mind to try to get your mind to focus on what you want it to, or not focus on what it's not supposed to, or things like that. I mean, do you have some way of kind of describing what this, like a framework or a list of categories?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. That's something I think I spent a good part of my time doing, is trying very hard to be able to make this a good framework for people to help them understand, because there's a lot of components. When you really do look at it, right, and look at the list of techniques or skills or attitude, like it's pretty long. And so at this point, you know, the way that I kind of, I guess, frame it for people is at the core and at the center is kind of your self-awareness and your confidence and trying to help you drive your performance from within you. And obviously self-awareness, confidence, they're umbrellas that then have quite a few things underneath them, right? Like what's going to help you with your self-awareness. Meditation would be one of those things that would fall under that in terms of self-awareness or self-reflection, right? That's going to help with self-awareness. And then with confidence, same thing. There's lots of things that are going to fall under that umbrella, like self-talk, imagery, mental preparation, you know, focusing on small successes and really taking those in. And so then you start to, as you said, you get under all of those layers and a lot of things start to pile up. And then outside of that core of really your own self-awareness and confidence, you're then going to be looking at focus is going to be a really big one. It's at the core of everything. It's at the core of, you know, how satisfied or dissatisfied you're going to be with a performance. It's at the core of your ability to control your emotions, your ability to perform up to potential, because if you're not focusing on the right thing at the right moment, you will underperform in some way, shape, or form. And so that's a really, really big one and a really big thing that I work on with clients, and a lot of different things that fall under that. Meditation, mindfulness would go under that as well as some different other skills and tools that, you know, are going to help somebody with training their attention, because your attention is a skill set and you can train it. And one of the things that things like stress or a poor mood do is it pulls your attention away from the present moment. And we're trying to train the athlete's attention to be present, right? To be in that moment, because that's when you're going to be able to really perform and to function at your highest ability. And so we're trying to find different ways to help them be able to really truly be present. And then another a big umbrella is your energy. And so it's not just, do you have a high level of energy? Are you pumped up versus are you, you know, not pumped up? There's a lot of things that go within your energy in terms of, you know, for example, do you have the right type of energy? Like, are you in an energy of maybe appreciation or gratitude or compassion? Because that actually helps to sync your mind and body for high performance. So there's a lot of different, you know, things that will fall under that umbrella as well. And then another one would be imagery or visualization. That's really, really important. And it's one of the biggest tools for an athlete to be able to, you know, do a good amount of imagery and visualization. And when it's paired with the physical practice or physical skill development, it really can help enhance that physical skill development. And then finally, perspective. For perspective, that's where like mindset will fall under. Like, what is your perspective? How are you looking at a situation? How are you heading into this particular maybe event or competition? And then also maybe that moment, right? And your ability to respond versus react in that moment, which is going to be a huge thing if you're in the middle of a competition. If you are able to respond versus react to what just happened, that's going to play a big role. And are you going to be able to continue to perform in the manner in which you need to? And so those are really how I kind of, I guess, frame it these days for people. And then under all of those things I mentioned is quite a slew of, you know, different skills or techniques. And then it's really just figuring out what's going to work for each person to help them, right, with their energy focus, perspective, and really having that confidence and self-awareness.
I wonder, just given the limits that we have in time here, I mean, people obviously can buy books and we'll give them your website so that they can reach out to you and get more extensive help. But for the person who is looking to get some value out of the 60 minutes, if we can give them some tactics, some things to do that they could do, because you're describing some skills that would take time to develop, that, you know, maybe you're counseling people on how to develop the skill. But, you know, like meditation, for example, if you tell somebody how to meditate and they've never meditated and they try, they will fail. They will not be able to do it, and they will think that it's stupid. And so it takes a long time to get to where you can even see the destination. And then it takes a lot longer than that to be able to where your mind is trained and you can go boop and you can focus on something and not be distracted by things. And so there's a set of skills that take time to develop that then can be deployed at the right moment with some knowledge of how things work, or maybe self-knowledge of when these things happen, or when I feel like this, that's what's happening, and I pull out my, you know, this arrow out of my quiver, and I've practiced that so much that, you know, zoom, that works. Okay, that'll be tough for us to resolve here in a few minutes. But then there'll be other things, I think, which are kind of like physiological mind-body tricks, you know, like deep breathing, you know, things like that, which, you know, the body is just built a certain way. And you can, if you just know about these things, and then you can pull the idea out of your mind at just the right moment to use it, it doesn't really take any training. You can just do that. And then if you've done it once or twice, you'll always remember, because, wow, that was great. That really helped me. So I want to spend at least a good chunk of our time talking about what are those things that we know are useful, that can work. And then another thing is that I think would be useful would be talking about this mindset idea. It's sort of been, you know, it's been popular, the growth mindset and all of this kind of thing. And I don't know how legit all of that stuff is, but surely it does matter. The perspective you bring to a challenge matters to how you react to it. You know, if you come to something that's really hard and you are terrified of failing and thinking you will fail, well, it can't possibly work out as well as if you see it as something, as an opportunity to grow, and it's not that big of a deal, and things like that. So let's start with the mindset, if you think that that's okay. Let's start with the mindset. What do you teach people about what kind of a perspective to bring to managing hard things?
Yeah, I think there's two.
Okay.
One is, as you mentioned, the growth mindset, right? Effort, because in sports, it's a big one, right? Putting in effort and focus on effort. And yeah. One of the reasons it's really big and really important why I do talk about it with my athletes is because for a lot of them, they've been praised, or the language that has been used around them is not growth mindset oriented. It's about their talent, right? You're really talented. You're really good. You're really successful, which creates that more fixed mindset. And for these athletes to get over difficult moments, you have to know that you can put in that effort and you can overcome this with your effort, that it was not your talent that got you here, that it was your effort and your work ethic and how much time you put in. And there's a little bit of that kind of myth that there's naturally talented athletes. But if you really look at them, like a Tiger Woods, for example, he put in a ton of time before anybody even really saw him play his first round of golf right on TV. He started playing, I think, when he was two. So that's a lot of work, right? And his dad did a lot of things to help train him to deal with distractions. That's work. That's time. That's not, you know, that builds that, I guess, what we would call talent or skill set, right? And so that's really, really important. But then I also talk to my clients about having a mindset around constant improvement. And I guess it's similar but different than the growth mindset. It's about, you know, really approaching things, and that this is about constant improvement. It's not about an end point. And if you look at really, really great athletes in any sport, that is their mindset. It is about constant improvement, and it's about constant improvement of themselves. And every opportunity, every moment is a moment to help them improve. Whether they did something really good, it's something that can help teach them about what they can do to become even better, and like a stepping stone for them. And if they didn't do something great, again, it's a learning opportunity. And so when they have that mindset of it's always about constant improvement, you start to remove that whole this was good versus this was bad. It's just everything is an opportunity to learn, to grow, and to improve. But then they also seem to have a mindset around helping others around them improve as well. Like they're not just about me-centered focus. They also are, how do I bring other people along for the ride of improvement? And whether that's their teammates or the team as a whole, the sport as a whole, maybe the community or their family, they're all about helping and making things better and improving.
Okay, well, that sounds really good. A thing that happens, I've heard people complain about, is that when they get stressed, and usually people can tell, you know, they get a dry mouth, or maybe they get a tremble or something, they can tell that they're stressed. That stresses them out. The fact that they're stressed makes them more stressed. Mm-hmm. What I've heard people say, and I wonder what you think about it, is the mindset is to recognize that your body is just doing its job. This is not a problem. This is what your body is supposed to do, right? The zebra's running from the lion. It needs the blood pressure to go up. It needs the heart rate to go up. It needs all these things to happen so it has its best chance to get away. And your body's trying to help you too. So this is not bad, you know, so that they can have less anxiety over it. What do you think?
I would definitely agree with that, because I think there are some that get stressed by, yes, being stressed and that physiological response. And as you said, it's very normal. Stress is not, it's not good or bad, right? Well, we usually, when we use the word stress, it really is more distress that we're talking about when people use the word stress. But as you mentioned, the zebra does get stressed, but it's not distressed. It's doing what it has been designed to do to get away from, you know, danger.
Yeah.
And if you look at anything, like I have a dog, and if she's in, you know, kind of danger, a big dog, she's small, big dog comes charging at her and she's a little scared for a moment. You know, as soon as it's resolved, she gives that shake. Like it's her way of just like shake it off and you move on, right? And animals are great at that, right? They don't dwell on what just happened. They just shake it off. Now they're present again. And they're in that next moment. And so, yeah, it a mindset or a framework of saying stress is not good or bad. What is the right level for you that will help you perform? Because you do need a little bit of stress, right? That zebra needs stress to get away physiologically. And so an athlete's the same way. You need a certain level to perform, but you then have to understand when is it getting past that point where now it's, you know, kind of the tipping point, and now you're getting into this is not helping me anymore. This is now going to hurt my focus or anything else that now contributes to my performance. And so then that's part of it, is understanding that and then managing it, creating tools and techniques. Breathing techniques, as you mentioned earlier, would be one of those examples of, you know, how do you manage that physiologically to help bring yourself down? And then, as you said, though, having a mindset to understand that it's not good or bad. It's just having that awareness of where is that point and proactively doing things so that you don't get to that point if it's now too much.
Right. Okay. I want to come back to this bag of tricks, things that people can do. But in terms of like kinds of things, another thing that I know happens, just at the podcast, and the topic was physical intelligence, and the idea was, you know, how do you learn physical skills? And the answer is that our brains are built for that. If they evolved for millions of years to get great at picking up physical skills, and the quicker you can get out of your own head and just let your brain work, the faster you're going to learn a skill and the better you're going to perform at the skill. And so the mistake that people will make is they get back in their head and they start thinking about it again. And they'll mess it up. Am I using words that make sense to a person that actually works in this field?
No, you definitely are. People get very much in their head or overthink things, right? Rather than just letting things flow and just let all of the, you know, if they're learning a skill, you know, that's one thing. And then also when you're just trying to display that skill set you've already developed, right? To just let it come through and not to try and think your way to do it, right? Just let it, your body knows what it needs to do.
This is like the yips or the twisties in gymnastics, where they, instead of just doing the thing, they're now thinking about, oh, you know, as they're doing the 16th flip in the air, they're starting to think about, oh, did I do that right? Am I going to land on my head now? They actually get in danger now because they're not letting their brain just do what it does. So how do you help people with this business of getting out of your head?
That's a good question. That's a big, it's my whole career right there, I guess, right? It's helping people get out of their head. So that's like, no, I think there are different, as you said, I guess, little tips, tricks, and then there's the bigger overarching process to help people get out of their own head. A big thing is helping people find something that brings them back to the present moment and something external of their own thoughts. So this is what comes to mind, right? It comes top of mind, for example. Like, let's say I have a baseball player or maybe a soccer player. And like, they're starting to think a lot, or they're overthinking things. They're in their head a little bit. I would have them, you know, for a baseball player, go down, grab, pick up the dirt and feel the dirt in their hands, or the soccer player, you know, grab the grass and feel the grass in the sand. I guess you could do that with a golfer too, right?
So they're just like feeling the texture of what they're touching.
Yeah, exactly. Feeling the texture, because what that's doing is it's pulling your focus out of their head, right? They're feeling something. Because, right, your focus can only be, it's either going to be in here on your thoughts and your thinking, or it's going to be out, right? And we want you to pull your focus out. And so that helps it. And then it helps pull their focus back to this moment. Because when they're feeling that dirt or feeling that grass, it's in this moment, right? And that's one of those things that will help kind of, you know, get someone in the moment, reset and not think quite so much, or not think at all, hopefully, in that moment.
I've actually seen baseball players doing that. And the other thing they do is they'll smell it. And that smell, I guess, brings them back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. Another thing that I have, now that I'm saying this, it comes to my mind, that I have used is music. If I'm listening to music, it's sort of like a meditation where it sort of fills my mind. And so my mind doesn't have a lot of empty space to bounce around in and start wondering about things. It's like chewing gum for my brain. Having that music. And related to that was when I used to do a lot of rock climbing, and rock climbing is a sport that it has, you know, if you're like me, you know, a 200-pound rock climber, then you're worried about falling. And so there's a lot of fear involved in it. And of course, the fear is not helpful. I had a little song. It's an old Civil War ditty that I would hear it in my mind when I got stressed, and it would calm me. And I think that it was because it was the same thing as like listening to music, you know, with headphones. Does that make any sense?
Oh, no, it makes complete sense. It's, as you said, listening to music, the chewing gum for your mind. It's funny because that's what I used to do when I played hockey. I'd chew gum. They gave me something to focus on, and obviously something physical, but it just gave my brain something to focus on. And a lot of athletes I work with, clients, and I did myself as well when I was playing, is listen to music. Wow. I had one of my clients actually today, and she taught me something different. Is she's a golfer, and she told me she listened to a podcast while she was on the range before her round. And I was like, you know what, that's, you know, usually we talk about music, but I think for her that really worked because it was engaging, right? It caught her attention. And so her mind didn't go elsewhere, right? Wasn't open to just drifting to worrying about the round or, you know, anything like that. And especially in an individual sport, when you're in a team sport, you can go, you know, get a conversation with somebody else to kind of, you know, get your mind off of things and not think too much. But when you're in an individual sport, that becomes a little bit more of a challenging task. So that was I think it was great for her we had talked about her listening to music, and she went off and listened to the podcast. I thought that was great because...
Good.
You know, definitely very engaging if it's something you're very interested in. So, no, it makes complete sense because, yeah, you want to give your mind something else to kind of occupy it so it doesn't start thinking about all the different things. Or what you were saying when you were rock climbing is almost like a mantra, right? And that's where sometimes those mantras come into place because it's giving your mind something to just do instead of go off in all these different directions.
Yeah. And it helped that I did it so often that it just came automatically. It was like my mind did it itself. It was unconscious when it knew it needed it. So that was cool. Okay, so let's keep going. Let's get down to another category. And this would be the kind of athlete who is at the end of their rope, right? It's the triathlete. And they just can't keep going, they think, right? Because, you know, your mind is always telling you, stop. When you're getting down to like 10% of your fuel reserves, it's saying, you're going to die. You know, you've got to stop now. And so how do you quiet that talk, that chatter that is ruining your ability to actually have that peak performance?
Yeah, I think in one sense, it's less about trying to quiet it, because I think when you try to quiet it, you almost make it louder. And it's more about redirecting the focus, right? If your focus is on how your body's feeling, how the thoughts that are coming because of how your body's feeling, that's going to make it really hard. Whereas there's other things that maybe you can place your attention on. If it's, you know, let's say the triathlete and they're at the end. So let's say they're in the run phase, right? Because that's generally right at the end. It would be maybe focus on a landmark, like, all right, let's just get to that bench. Let's just get to that stop sign. Let's just get to, right, that next kind of place and just focus on that and make it short, right? Really chop down the amount of distance maybe they still have to go to make it more manageable for them, to make it more manageable for their mind to be able to say, yeah, no, I could go to that stop sign. Like, I'll just get there. Let's just worry about getting there.
Fantastic.
Right? And because it, yeah, a lot of the times when you're in that place, it's just, even if it's in one sense not far away after an entire trot, like doing all those other things, right, that can just seem too overwhelming.
Right.
And so that's where you got to really chop it down to that manageable level.
So if you've got 40 miles to go, that could be very defeating to think about. I've got 40 miles. But if I've just got to get to the end of the street, I can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay, good. Were there any other buckets that we haven't talked about for dealing with stresses or anxieties or chatter in the moment?
I think we covered a good amount. I think the only one we didn't get too in depth, which we talked about, was the breathing techniques. I think that is, you know, if you do the right type of breathing technique, it is designed to help you physiologically, right, kind of calm down, which can definitely help. And there's usually two different breathing techniques that I bring to my clients to see which one works best for them. One of them, I think, is pretty well known out there, which is called box breathing. And a lot of people generally know it. And so for those who don't, you're making a box with your breath. So you breathe in for 4 seconds and then you hold your inhale for 4 seconds and then you exhale for 4 seconds and then hold that exhale out for 4 seconds and repeat that process. And then the other one is diaphragmatic breathing. So with this one, it's really about trying to make your exhale twice as long as your inhale. So for example, if you breathe in for 3 seconds, you would try and make your exhale last for 6 seconds. If you breathe in for 4 seconds, try and make your exhale last for 8 seconds. And then the only other thing about it is you want to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. And you just want to make it very nice and gentle. It doesn't have to be like this giant inhale and then like just like really quickly try and push everything out, right? Because you're trying to really, if you're trying to breathe out for 6 to 8 seconds, right, you got to really elongated and really kind of gently push that, right, push that air out.
Right.
And so which one works better for people generally comes down to their circumstance, what type of sport they're playing and what fits best within their sport and also personal. Like I have all my clients usually, you know, kind of test out both of them and see which one they feel they like and seems to calm them down a little bit better. And then kind of go from there.
And so this would be something like, before the event started, they're trying to get in the right mental space for the event, because I guess it would be tough to slow your breathing while you're doing your run.
Yeah, so that's where, again, it depends on the sport, right? So some sports do, like golfers, do that, okay. Right? They can, they have the time to be able to still do that while they're out there. But you're correct. If you're in a sport where you're pretty heavy breathing and in one sense, like tennis, for example, you're going to be breathing pretty heavily, but also being able to drop your heart rate is a good thing to be able to come back, be you know, a little bit down and centered and calmer. But yeah, you have to understand what works for you. So yes, if you're in a sport where it's pretty cardiovascular demanding, you're going to want to do it probably beforehand, maybe just to help calm some nerves if you're heading into a competition, and then figure out, you know, what might work within your competition or your game. Maybe it's just one breath. Maybe it's two breaths. Like for me as a hockey player, I'd be breathing pretty heavily, but I'm going to calm down pretty quickly before my next shift. And so I might be able to do a breath or two, you know, a very purposeful breathing before I go out for my next shift. So those are things that we start to discuss, like what's really going to work for them, given the context of their sport, what's going on. And that's where, again, it is a practice, it's a skill set. So if you get really good at it, then maybe you only need one or two breaths to help kind of get you recentered and settled.
Good. Well, and I think at the end of your event or at the of your training, doing these things helps you to begin the recovery as fast as possible so you can get ready for the, you know, the next thing, whether you've got another event the same day like you were talking about or you're just trying to get ready for the next workout. And another thing which I have never tried when it came to sports, but it's sort of, it's classic strategy for like presentations at work is to tell a joke, right? If you can laugh, it really cuts the stress unbelievably well.
You're absolutely correct, right? So I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, humor is such a great antidote, I guess, to stress, right? It's just so fantastic. And so I tell, that's something definitely beforehand or if they have the opportunity in the middle of their performance to laugh. If they're getting a little stressed, it cuts through it so nicely and it helps you relax and just let go of that stress, kind of, I guess, like my dog shaking, right? Like it just is like it's gone and you're ready to move forward. And so it's a huge thing and something I think some athletes do very well and some don't. And I think it comes back to how are your mindset approaching your event. If it's something you're there to have fun with and yes, you're going to take it seriously and be focused, but you can laugh, you can have some fun while you're doing it. And it's actually going to ultimately enhance your performance. It goes back to one of the things I said earlier where, you know, there are certain things you feel or emotions you have that can help enhance your performance, not only from the mental side, but also physiologically. Joy, which usually comes along with laughter, is one of them. So it has a lot of benefits.
Fantastic. Okay, so just to summarize, because we talked about a bunch of things here. There was the breathing, and there was the sort of the sensations of the dirt or the grass, and maybe smelling them also for bringing you back to the present. We were just talking about laughing or maybe just different kinds of emotions. I wonder if even like singing might evoke certain kinds of emotions like that, that are really sort of primal that get you back to the present. Anyway, there's all kinds of things that people can do and they should experiment and find what works for them. Is that right?
No, absolutely. There's so many things. And that's the thing I've loved as I've gone through this journey myself is, you know, I give people a framework and some ideas like we just discussed, but then that ultimately comes down to them knowing themselves, knowing their sport, knowing what's going to work for them. And some athletes and clients I've worked with have come back with things like I would never have thought of, like the podcast, listening to the podcast before on the range and just taking it and making it their own and what really works for them. And I think that's ultimately what you're looking to do is, you know, take some of these ideas, but then really make it your own and really do what's going to work best for you.
Okay, so in a little bit of time here, we've got a little bit of time left, and I want to leave some time for you to tell us about, you know, your practice and how people can find you. But what haven't we spoken about that you think is important? And mostly the audience here is not going to be professional athletes. It's going to be people doing it for, it's important to them. They're doing it for their health, but also, you know, for their ego. And it's a part of enjoying their lives. And so they want to do well. And I'll also add in, because I meant to mention it earlier, that as athletes get older, we're the masters of compensating, right? You know, I'm not as strong as I was. I don't recover as fast as I used to. You know, I got all these things that are just not working as well as they used to. And so I've gotten so much smarter. I don't waste time. I don't drink as much. I eat better. I'm doing so many things right now to try to compensate for losing things which I didn't actually earn in the first place, but they just go away. Well, this mental performance, I think, is maybe the last bastion of closets to go in and clean out and organize, because it's, you can't just try harder at this kind of thing. You kind of have to have a clue about what to do. So what else should we know? Is there something else we should know, the older athlete, in order to compensate even more for the things that we're losing?
Yeah, I think a good one, I like to bring this up a lot, and it actually goes with what you just kind of said with the compensation and knowing what you might need to do in certain situations due to needing to compensate is what I call kind of the mental preparation side of the equation. And I think it's really important because it's directly addressing things that you might need to take into account and then creating an action plan around that based off of the reality of the situation or possible things that could happen. Oh. And it goes back to what you were saying in terms of helping with, you know, stress or pressure, just helping you be a little bit more relaxed sitting into what you're doing, because you're addressing the possibility of something that maybe is grounded in reality. So for example, what I mean by this is I usually use the structure of an if-then statement. So it's really saying like, what if, you know, blank happens that, you know, is grounded in something that is not going according to plan, is a distraction. It could be as simple as saying like, what if my stress gets to a 7 out of 10 and I need to keep it at a 4 out of 10, let's say, right? You would then sit down and write out and make your action plan of saying like, okay, if I notice my stress is at a 6 out of 10, then depending again on your sport, I will, I don't know, go to the side over here, take 2 diaphragmatic breaths, pick up some grass, you know, really recenter myself, you know, come back. So you're really strategically sitting there and saying before these things do happen, you're in a calm mind making a plan of what you know you're going to need to do, what technique or tool or strategy, maybe compensation you might need to do based off of knowing yourself and what your body is capable of. And then you have that, and you have that as kind of part of your toolbox to draw from, rather than in that moment trying to desperately think about what should I do now. Because if you're stressed, it's going to be very hard to clearly think about your solution.
Oh yeah.
But if you've already thought about it in advance, that's more easy. Now you just got to pull it and implement it.
Yeah, where my mind ran to when you were describing that was the situation of like, I'm going to do some big event. And I have a ton of anxiety over it because so many things could go wrong. I have so much stress. I don't even know where to begin. But the way to deal with the stress is to write it down. Well, what are all the things that could go wrong? Okay, let's go through them one at a time. If that happened, what would I do about it? And once I've walked through that process, unless I got to where, you know, half of them, I'm going to die if they happen. Okay, well, all right, maybe I shouldn't do this event. But if it's just, you know, hassles that I got to deal with, well, how's that stressful? It's just a pain. It's not like a danger anymore. It's not a bunch of unknowns anymore. It's just a bunch of possible pains in the neck that might happen. So it's much less stressful. So yeah, writing things down, having a plan that makes perfectly good sense. Okay, well, that is really, really good. Thanks for that. Okay, Kate, tell us about how people can find you and who should look for you. You know, what sort of things do you do for people?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess I'll start there. I think, you know, I work generally with people who are just wanting to become better. They don't necessarily have to have a glaring issue, but they can, like if they know their, you know, their confidence or lack of confidence or is really impacting their performance, it definitely will, you know, help them with that. But for some people, it's just about they know that there's a gap between where they are and where they know they can perform. And I think definitely with the older athletes I've worked with, it usually isn't anything super glaring as it is. They just know they're putting all this time, energy, and effort towards this sport. And they've been doing all the physical stuff, all the instructions, all the private lessons, whatever it might be. Mm. And so they get to that point where they hit maybe a little bit of a wall and they know there's more there within them. And that's where they'll kind of, you know, seek me out because they know that it must be maybe fall under more of that mental, you know, fitness or mental skill set of the equation. And then they'll come and find me. And then the umbrella is quite wide. It's, you know, pretty much anything that maybe you can't see or touch that impacts your physical performance is generally going to be what I probably help you with. And then how people can find me is my company name is called Quantum Performance. And so my website address is qpathlete.com. And then that is the QP Athlete is my Instagram handle. And then on Facebook, you can find me under Quantum Performance as well as on YouTube as well.
Excellent. I have all those URLs, so I'll put those in the show notes for anybody to find them there. Also, I'll put the names of your books that people can look for on Amazon, or I assume Amazon? And
Amazon's the best place, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, excellent. All right. Well, Kate, thank you very much. This has been helpful to me. This is totally a weak spot for me, and I've just got to get better at this. This is as a part of my plan to compensate. So thanks very much.
No, thanks for having me.
Well, have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening in to my chat with Kate Allgood of Quantum Performance. You can find more information about Kate and her books in the show notes.